Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
My friends, take a listen to this.
Well, we're not the richest of girls, you know, so we just have a little bed and no couch. So you'd have to share with all three of us.
And on this cold, cold night, it's gonna be crowded and sweaty and stuff.
Yeah.
And we can't even afford pajamas.
No.
Which means we would be naked.
No, I think it'd be fine.
Great.
Oh, it was critically completely panned, but a huge hit with audiences. It made like nearly $250 million, but 20 years later, it's back in the cinemas. And I need to know, is it still okay to love Love Actually? Writer Sarah Maria Griffin is on the line now to talk about it. Sarah, how are you?
Hi, Lottie. I'm very well. How are you?
I am excellent. I'm just going to come right out and ask Sarah, is this a Christmas movie? Because in my head, it is.
You know, I watched it last night and Love Actually is a lot of things, but it most definitely is a Christmas movie.
Yay!
It is technically set. It is in the same way that Die Hard is. You cannot deny it. It is set at that very special time of year. There are lights everywhere. There are children singing. There are trees. It is absolutely technically set at Christmas. No doubt about it.
That is good to know. That puts me at ease, Sarah. Now, before we get to your own view, I just want to take a look at some of the issues, I suppose, that audiences might have with it, you know, today in the year 2023. First off, will we talk a bit about, you know, stalking and secret filming?
Right. I tell you, you really do feel the 20 years between then and now. The love story with Keira Knightley, who is 18 in this film, is
so wild, jarring.
Yeah, it's wild. And it's very jarring. What we remember maybe in the kind of mists of time of, oh, her husband's best friend shows up at the door and plays carols and declares his love. What we forget is that he never speaks to her up until this point. And she even says to him, we've never really talked. There is an edge to it, all right, that I think time has undercut the romantic nature of that gesture. It's a little uneasy.
There's a couple of moments around that whole storyline that just don't really sit well. I mean, and then there's also issues with gender and power dynamics in the film, isn't there?
There is Love Actually is made up of 10 different stories about it's got a huge rolling cast, a real all-star cast, and it's intercut with between all of these stories happening really, really quickly. So you kind of don't get a moment to pause to think because it's all moving past you so quickly. But there are of the 10 stories, 3 of them are about an employer who is having some description of a romantic or sexual relationship with their direct employee. Like, 3 of them. There's the Prime Minister, and played by the very charismatic Hugh Grant, have it falling in love or lust with Martin McCutcheon on first sight. You know, Colin Firth has a mm-hmm. romance with a Brazilian cleaner who they don't even speak the same language up until the very last sequence. And then, of course, the again, very uneasy relationship, and some of the best performance in the film is Emma Thompson around this. Alan Rickman's relationship with the secretary.
That storyline killed me.
Oh, I tell you, I saw this film for the first time when I was 15 years of age. And even then I was looking at Emma Thompson and going, oh no, how could you do that to her?
No,
you know?
It's too
much.
She
plays a blinder.
The necklace scene kills me. Even no matter how many times I watch that movie, when she opens the damn CD, I cry.
And it's a Joni Mitchell CD, and you see the light going out of her eyes. She takes this, there's actually a really powerful scene in it where she takes a moment to go and stand next to their bed in the bedroom, and she sort of just she's just giving an incredible performance. It's heartbreaking, you know? So yeah, there's a lot of uneasiness. Now, it whips by you at absolute breakneck pace. The editing is incredible, but a lot of pretty disquieting.
Actually, sorry, we can't forget about the age differences as well. That's a big thing in the movie.
So I looked into this because I was very curious as to kind of get the exact numbers on how what the age gap situation was like. The actress who played Mia, who's Alan Rickman's lovely assistant, was 33. Now, Alan Rickman was in his 50s, but 33 is a grown-up, you know. Emma Thompson is 44. So there is a kind of a chasm between everyone's ages. Martine McCutcheon is 27. Hugh Grant is 44. There are the same age differences we see in all Hollywood movies. Women are expected to be younger, to stand up as romantic interest, I suppose. There is an age difference on the other side of it, though, with Laura Linney is about 15 years older, I think, than Rodrigo Santoro, who plays the very handsome Carl. So there's age gaps across the board among the different
stories. Yeah, and I think it's something that even 20 years ago, you wouldn't have second questioned. It would have just been, yeah, that's what you see in movies.
Yeah, there's not, it's not something that I think was thought particularly hard about. It is something that feels very present in all of the scenes, that the women are a bit younger.
And there's also a huge presence, or at least a lot of suggestion, I think, that if you just make a big grand gesture of romance, all your problems will be solved. I mean, it's a slight simplification of the situation for most people, I'd say.
I'll tell you what, it is. And some of that is Hollywood magic, right? For sure. But some of it, again, feels a bit blunted or something. You know, there is that lovely sequence at the end with, you know, the little guy running through the airport. But there was definitely a part of me that was like, this is just after 9/11, you know, there is a child sprinting through the airport, you know, there's an edge to it. All right. And the grand gestures, like that moment with Keira Knightley and and Andrew Lincoln, who is showing her the flashcards with his declaration of love. That is a grand gesture, but it's a grandly kind of weird one as well. You know, it's not all love should actually be, I think, centered around doing enormous big gestures that don't have any real love story that follows after them.
Yeah, but, you know? And also, I think it's fair to point out that not all love should be very white, very straight. You know, I know that the movie just doesn't have a huge amount of diversity in it. So what are the good parts? Because it was a massive hit. I know critically it wasn't, but it was a massive hit. There's not a huge amount of representation there. So let's talk about the good bits. Why did people love it?
You know, I think a lot of why people really love this film is because of the cast and because there are really incredible vignettes and moments that are scattered throughout all of the uneasy things. Like, there is a lot of really very fatphobic language. There's a lot of gay panic. There's a lot of things that would stop you in your tracks. But among that, I think what people come back to is the memories of Colin Firth wading into a lake for his pages of his manuscript, or Hugh Grant dancing across 10 Downing Street. There are moments of delight that are kind of peppered through it that I think people go back to. But if you were to watch it today, you might be, those moments are kind of few and far between. So you might remember it really nostalgically for these iconic moments, but you might find, with the way the world has changed and the way that we, I think, are generally as a society a bit more kind to each other than we used to be, that the film spends a lot of time trying to convince us that Martine McCutcheon is fat. Very blunt. It's absurd. It's really awful.
And it's bizarre. It's really bizarre.
And
it's also...
The things that you might think date...
No, go on, what? Go ahead.
Oh, the things that you think might date badly, like Martin Freeman's romance on set shooting the sex scenes, things that you might think are cringy, actually have a lot of sweetness and a lot of earnestness in them. That, by far, is the sweetest love story of all of them, you know?
Tell me how that's the sweetest love story.
They meet naturally. They're a little awkward at first. Things grow naturally between them and they run off together hand in hand in the airport.
Well, things definitely grow between them when we see that happen. But I think it's good to point out that it's a Richard Curtis film, because diversity is an issue for a lot of Richard Curtis films these days. And this was the first of them. So a lot of people would look at it through that lens of Richard Curtis. And do you think that taints it, or do you think... Is it fair to hold a Christmas romance film up to that kind of scrutiny? Should we just accept it for what it is, like a little bit of crack, a little bit of escapism?
You know, there's absolutely an argument for that, of taking things at lightness, and at total risk of sounding like an absolute Grinch around the season. I do think it's also important, if something's going to be a modern classic, to hold it up to high standards, you know, to, if you're going to be watching this film with your teenagers for the first time, or if you're bringing people into it, it's got a lot of unkindness in it as well. It's got a lot of really cruel sequences in it, you know? So I think that on one hand, it is a treasure from the past, you know, the recent past, but the world has changed a lot. And holding it up to scrutiny, I think it's respectful to it as well. It's like, well, this is an important film, so shouldn't we look at it as though it's an important film? Shouldn't we talk about it with seriousness, you know? So yeah, there's huge issues with it, but I think if it's going to continue to be a modern classic and run back through cinemas in December, then we should be able to talk about it with that same integrity, you know?
Yeah, see, I think that's a really good way of looking at it, because I'm going to watch it and I'm going to enjoy it. And I know that there is a lot of stuff in it that is not okay and I shouldn't enjoy, but I will point it out. I will probably sit with my husband and go, Jesus, isn't it crazy that that's in the movie, or that we never noticed that before, or, you know, oh my God, that's a bit weird seeing that today, isn't it? I don't know if I noticed that 10 years ago, but I'm still going to watch it and enjoy it, and I'd be lying if I said otherwise, but my brain watches it differently.
Totally. I think when we're looking back at films from the past that we grew up with, or that mattered a lot to us as young people, or that have been part of the landscape of our culture year on year, it'd be like looking at Home Alone and kind of sitting there going, Kevin McAllister's mother really should have kept a better eye on him in the airport. You know? There's all of our faves are problematic. No matter what comes from the past, it will take with it the trappings of the time that it was made. So it's important to be able to say, actually, hard pass on some of that, and I think finding value in it as well and having a nuanced approach is really, really important.
Okay,
it's not instructive.
Listen,
you know?
final question, will you watch it on the telly over Christmas?
Do you know what, Lottie, I watched it last night. I think I'm probably good for another few years.
Okay. Writer Sarah Maria Griffin, thank you for joining me today. I for one will be watching, so text me in on 51552. Would you refuse to watch it because it's out of date? Come on. It's Christmas, lads.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.